Welcome to Popcorn and Podcasting.
Welcome back to another episode of Popcorn and Podcasting with Jenny and Chaz. We are here today in our house, as always, and
we don't have popcorn today.
No, but our trivia question deals with popcorn.
Yeah.
Which is?
What makes popcorn pop?
And the answer is?
The kernels are airtight, and there is a little bit of water on the inside of them. And when they heat up, the water turns into steam, and that takes up more space than water. So the pressure builds up, and then the kernel explodes.
Boom! Or pop.
Yeah. And I don't know how it ends up being all fluffy and stuff, but that's how it pops.
That makes me think that the moisture might be distributed a little bit.
Maybe.
Yeah. But yes, that is how popcorn pops. And I think that's a very appropriate question for Popcorn and Podcasting.
Very necessary information if you're going to be listening to our podcast.
Yep, we have to be experts on popcorn.
Because it's in our title.
We already are experts on all the different homemade toppings that you can use for air popcorn. Yeah. We found out that chili powder works really good.
Yeah.
With a little bit of salt.
Mm-hmm. It's very
also
good.
Also, lemon pepper.
Lemon pepper is yummy.
Seasoned salt is very good.
Yep.
Parmesan cheese is the ultimate.
Yep. Macaroni and cheese.
Oh, yeah.
Cheese is always good.
Macaroni and cheese. You can even use the cheap generic cheeses for that. It doesn't even have to be Kraft for the popcorn.
Ranch powder.
Ranch powder works good. What was the other powder we used? Or something else? I can't remember.
I'm not sure.
If we think of any more, we'll let you know. So that we can be the experts on popcorn. Okay. So today we're going to read a talk by Lex D'Azevedo. And for those of you who haven't heard of him, he's a very prominent LDS musician. In fact, he was one of them that's been around.
For a long time.
Yeah, since...
Not that he's old or anything, but...
He probably is. How old is he?
I don't know. I have no
His
idea
daughter's
at all.
A very popular LDS musician, too, with a bit more pop style than his... But anyway, he's been around since before Michael McLean, if that gives you an idea. And so he's been in music for a long time and doing stuff for the church with music. Anyway, so this is a talk he gave called A Closer Look at Popular Music.
And it was in the Enzyme in March of 1985.
Yeah. You
want to start? Sure. It was one of those no-win situations. I'd been asked to speak at a stake fireside on the subject of pop music and morality, a highly sensitive topic at best. Unfortunately, the previous evening, a member of the stake presidency had closed down a stake youth dance. In his judgment, the music and the youth had gotten out of hand. I could feel the emotional intensity in the air as the young people filled in to sit on one side of the chapel and the adults sat on the other.
Awkward.
No one wanted to hear a lecture. They wanted to air their thoughts about last night's dance. I was bombarded by questions and comments from both sides.
I'm sure the Lord is displeased when our youth dance to loud, vulgar music in his own house. You think it's loud and vulgar because you don't like it. Your parents probably thought your music was loud and vulgar. Why don't you kids learn to appreciate real music, classical music, instead of idolizing those immoral rock stars? You think rock stars are immoral? Did you ever read about Wagner or Liszt? But that's different. Their music is beautiful and uplifting. It is good. Boring might be a better word for it.
One elderly brother stood to settle the whole matter. I can't always make out the words, but whenever I hear the sound of that electric guitar, I know they're singing about dope. And with that, he dropped back into his seat as if he had solved every issue.
A few... Some people do look at it that way. If it's rock music, it's of the devil. It's pure and simple. It's all about drugs.
Just like all the Beatles songs are about
drugs. All the Beatles songs are about drugs.
A few nodded in agreement. Others snickered or laughed out loud. I was tempted to chuckle myself until I realized that he had made the most profound comment of the evening. He was literally right. To him, every song with an electric guitar was associated with dope. In his mind and memory, the electric guitar and dope were inextricably connected.
Interesting. That makes me think that a lot of our assumptions about music, a lot of our first inclinations are based on our stereotypes that we have already
internalized.
Whether they be, you know, that this music is evil or that this music is boring, for example.
Yeah.
You know, just...
I mean, or even that, you know, this music's good, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a stereotype about Mozart's music that it will make you smarter. So, you know, you can go on to assume that every single piece of music that Mozart wrote will make you smarter. When that may not be the case.
And then that extends to... classical music. Saying that classical music, anything that was written by any of the great composers, will make you smarter and stuff. And that's a stereotype, just like his stereotype that rock music is
about drugs.
Okay. In each of our minds, certain kinds of music are tied deeply to our own experiences and emotions. Our favorite music has an intensity an intensely personal meaning to us. Memories of our childhood, first date, first love, youth conferences, prom night, testimony meetings, marriage, and old friends may all be tied to a certain kind of music in one way or another. I'm having a terrible reading today. Thus, when someone attacks our music, we may feel that they are also attacking our deepest, most treasured experiences.
That's very true. Because I remember as a kid, Saturday was always the cleaning the house day, and we'd always turn on music as we cleaned the house. And my dad liked 60s, 70s music, so he would always turn that on. And so there are certain songs that still today, when I hear them, you know, I think of these cool memories cleaning the house with my family. You know, I like a lot of the Beatles songs a lot because they bring back these cool memories and, you know, and Styx. And
yeah. My dad listened to Styx. He loved Styx.
My dad did too.
Yeah, because of it, I like Styx too.
I gave my dad a Styx album, a Styx CD one birthday, and I got an empty CD case. And I put some sticks in it, and I gave it to him first.
That's great.
Because I knew he was kind of expecting it, because I'd been asking him. His birthday was coming up, and I was like, Dad, what's your favorite music? You know, like, what band do you like the most? And he told me Styx. And so...
So you're like, I'll give you Styx.
I knew he was expecting a Styx CD for his birthday from me, so... I got the empty CD case and put sticks in it. But I did get him a real CD, too.
That's great.
He still has that empty CD case with sticks in it.
Yeah. That's kind of cool, too, that it's the same. Because, like, sticks, and there was another one, and I don't know their names, but I'd recognize their music that make me think of my family when I was young, just because that's what my parents loved to listen to.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, and, you know, and when you're a kid, you don't know what the songs are about. You don't understand the lyrics.
Which could be a warning to...
to parents
that listen to music that may be questionable. Your kids will think fondly of that music.
Yeah.
You really want them to.
Yeah, there was, you know, I mean, some of the songs that I grew up, you know, thinking were great songs.
You find out later, are about dope.
Yeah. And I was like, oh man, why did I listen to this all the time? I listened to it all the time because I liked it.
Yeah.
Because it brought memories back of, you know, when I was a kid. Anyway, continuing. Is it my turn?
Yeah.
Parents and, are we in the middle of a...
I think you're right there.
Oh, okay. Because our response to music is so intensely personal, it is difficult to be objective when discussing music and morality. Most discussions, in fact, fail to focus on the moral issues at all. Instead, they quickly denigrate into arguments about individual tastes in which we ascribe moral qualities to those things we like. In short, that which we like to call good and that which we don't like, oh, that which we like, we call good, and that which we don't like, we call bad.
Convenient.
Yeah. Parents and leaders of youth would do well not to point the finger at broad categories, such as hard rock, pop, or country and western, for two reasons. Categories are vague and mean different things to different people. Number two, to discuss categories is to miss the entire point. Moral and immoral songs exist in nearly every kind of music, including mm-hmm. classical.
Yeah.
And attacking a specific category may lead a person to feel justified in listening to immoral music of another type.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you, you know, if someone tells you that all classical music is great and wonderful, then you'll, you know, then you'll feel justified in listening to the most immoral classical music.
Yeah.
Because it's classical.
There was a piece that I used to really like until I saw the play surrounding it, and I was like, this is not
the
a good
opera?
Song. Yeah, it was an opera piece. And since then, I just, you know, I can't bring myself to listen to it because I know what it's about. but yeah, it's the same thing with, you know, I'm not a big fan, for example, of hard rock, but there are a couple of hard rock songs that have such great messages that I love them.
Yeah.
But anyway, okay. For those confused by the issues involved in any discussion about music and morality, let me assure you that there is a way out of the confusion. It is possible to understand music's incredible power, consider the moral issues raised by that power, and then look at the music of today in light of its moral consequences. I'm not one to quickly condemn the music of our day. Popular music is my profession, and it's one of the greatest enjoyments of my life. I come from a long history of involvement in popular music. My mother, Alice King, was one of the four singing King sisters.
Say that 10 times quick.
Alice King was one of the four singing King sisters. Yeah, that's hard. All the S's and ing's and K's. Yeah. I began my musical training early. While I was in college, I traveled with the King sisters as their arranger and accompanist.
Wow.
Later, yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah, we'll have to put a little video of the King sisters because I don't even know exactly who they are. The name sounds familiar. I'll have to find a YouTube video and clip them on there. Later, I worked as the musical director for the four preps. We can look them up too, see who they are. In 1965, I began work with Capitol Records as a record producer. A few years later, I was hired as an arranger and rehearsal pianist for the Sonny and Cher Comedy Hour on CBS television. In the 70s, I created the music for Saturday's Warrior, The Order Is Love, and My Turn on Earth. So there you go. That's who. If you haven't heard of Lex de Azevedo, I'm sure you've at least heard of the Saturday's Warrior soundtrack, if nothing else.
Throughout all these years in the music business, I've learned that music has great power, both for good and for evil. And I've become increasingly concerned that that power is being used for evil in much of today's popular music. Music is so powerful that it affects even our physical beings. Who hasn't had the experience of tapping his toe to a certain song without even realizing he was tapping until after the fact? Many ancient people recognized the power of music on the body, and some used music as a healing agent. In many mythologies, the god of music is also the god of medicine.
In recent years, studies have substantiated these ancient ideas, demonstrating music's effect on a myriad of bodily functions: pulse rate, respiration rate, blood pressure, galvanic skin responses, brainwave impulses, muscle responses, finger coordination, and reading speed and comprehension. One study suggests that certain rhythms actually have a weakening effect on the muscles of the body. It would be interesting to know what kind of rhythms those are.
Yeah. A force so powerful that it can influence our hearts, our glands, and our muscles is a force to be reckoned with. The influence is significant enough that we should take care what kind of music we allow into our homes. Music also has great power on our emotions. Music has been called the universal language because it speaks directly to our emotions. And our emotions and feelings influence our actions.
The power music has to communicate feelings was made dramatically clear to me while I was writing a musical score for the film Where the Red Fern Grows. That's cool. I didn't know you wrote the film score for The Red Fern Grows. Incidentally, the kid who plays on Red Fern Grows was also Joseph Smith on the first Vision video.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I don't think he's LDS either. Maybe I'm wrong.
Oh. There's trivia for today.
There's the trivia for today. What is the guy's name who plays on Where the Red Fern Grows, and is he LDS? That means we better look it up, too.
Yeah. So he's in The Red Fern Grows and also the Joseph Smith
movie? The old restoration video. They still have it on the missionary videos. Maybe they use the new one now.
Okay.
But in my mission, they still used it.
We'll look that up. You can look it up, too.
Okay.
Okay.
While working on that project, I encountered a serious problem. The entire story was built around a boy's love for his dogs, but that love wasn't being communicated through the film itself. I composed a tender love theme to fill that void, and suddenly flat images on strips of celluloid had emotional life. The audience wept.
Music.
That's true, too. Everybody I know that watched it growing up, I always cried. Of course, my teacher in sixth grade cried while reading the book, too.
Oh, poor teacher. Is it still you?
I can get more if you want. Okay. Music also has great effect on words. I like to use this example of a popular poem from the early 60s. She loves you. You think you've lost your love, yet I saw her yesterday. It's you she's thinking of, and she told me what to say. She said she loves you, and you know that can't be bad. Yes, she loves you, and you know you should be glad. Ooh. There we go. Here it looks like, ooh. She loves you, yeah, yeah, yeah. She loves you, yeah, yeah, yeah.
This text is almost humorous when read alone.
Especially when you get to the woo or part.
It is far from award-winning poetry. Yet when these words were set to a free-swinging, infectious tune, they created an irresistible force. Fans rushed out to buy more than 3 million singles of this record. How many copies of this text would have sold if it had not been set to music? Usually, music gives a song its emotional power, while lyrics tie that power to a concrete idea. Generally, lyrics appeal to the head, while music captures the heart. The lyrics of She Loves You are rather innocuous, but the situation becomes serious when questionable or immoral words are wedded to an appealing melody. This was never clearer to me than when I was hired to make an instrumental version of another popular song. I didn't care much for the tune, and cared even less for the words. In order to take the melody and harmony off the record, though, I had to play it at least a dozen times. Even though I was making an instrumental version, and wasn't at all interested in the words, I couldn't get the melody or the words out of my mind for days afterward. Hard to remember words stick in the mind easily when combined with catchy, easy-to-remember melodies. That song kept returning to haunt me. Ironically, I didn't even like the song. What if I had liked it?
Oh, that's kind
of
like how
I hate that. That's one of the most annoying things to me, is when I get stupid songs stuck in my head.
Yeah, that's like at work when I had to, I was making a video. They wanted a video of this talent show to be posted on the internet. And so I was making the video. And in order to look up the, there was one of the songs that was sung. It was a solo. And I couldn't tell for sure what she was saying in the song. But I didn't know the name of the song anyway, so I had to look it up. Found out it's not a very good song. You know, that it's got some messages that are not very good. And, but I still had to make the video. It was part of my job, and I couldn't leave it out because I'd been assigned to do it. And ever since then, I get the song stuck in my mind all the time. And I'm like, ah! And it's a very catchy tune.
Mm-hmm.
But... And there are certainly worse songs out there. You know, if it was too bad, they wouldn't have allowed me to put it on the thing anyway. You know, or they wouldn't have asked me to put it on. But still.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Music is the sugar coating that makes bitter lyrics palpable. Palatable. We may become so infatuated with the rhythm, melody, or singer of the word, of the song, that we transfer this emotion to the words, not caring what they really say. Even if the words are drug-oriented, erotic, violent, satanic, or just plain silly, when tied to a hit tune, they sneak past the screening mechanism of the brain to be stored in the subconscious and to affect the listener accordingly.
And to pop up back in your brain at random times.
Yep. And Satan's very good at finding the worst times for him to come up.
Mm-hmm.
He's very, very cunning at that. He does that.
And that
all
was something I heard about. That reminds me of something I heard about pornography one time.
Mm-hmm.
That physically, the body has the ability to vomit up stuff that's not good for the body, but the brain, the mind, doesn't have that ability.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff that's not good for the mind is stuck there, and to be seen. Again,
over
in your mind, and it are to be heard again, over and over in your mind. It, you know, okay, well.
And that's one of the real problems with popular music today, one that adds to the confusion in discussing it. It comes down to a lack of control. We can't control the lyrics attached to memorable music. We can't control what the music and lyrics do to us. And much of the time, we can't even control what we listen to. For example, most radio stations, rock, pop, country, or whatever, generally broadcast music indiscriminately. A moral song will be followed by a song about sex or violence, and unless we are constantly at the radio dial, we listen to both. Record albums often have a similar mix. We could skip the objectionable songs, but that's often too much trouble. Interesting.
One good thing about the way music is going these days, where you can just buy singles off of
iTunes,
you can buy the good songs and not the bad songs.
Yeah.
From an artist. You don't have to buy a whole CD, good songs and bad songs.
Which puts even more responsibility on us as individuals.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just say, well, it's not, I don't really like that song, it's the other songs that I like. You can't say that anymore.
If you downloaded it and you have it on your MP3 player, then you chose to listen to it.
Yeah.
And you chose to pay for it. Interesting. Okay. More choice equals more responsibility.
Responsibility. With great power comes great responsibility.
Much of our confusion about music can be cleared up by becoming more conscious of the music we are listening to and of its effect on us. Once we recognize what the music is doing to us, we are in a better position to screen out the bad and enjoy the good. We should look at the music we allow into our homes and ask, is this music with its lyrics conducive to the Spirit of the Lord? Will it exercise its power in a positive or negative way?
Certainly, in popular music today, there is music that is acceptable and worthwhile. In the last few years, for example, we heard some popular performers sing of the virtues of married love and of the love between parent and child. Two others recorded a song expressing the hope that all people would learn to live in perfect harmony. Another performer made the charts with a song specifically about doing right. Other songs have praised much laudable goals such as peace, equality, sharing, and freedom. Of course, all the music performed by the artists who recorded these songs is not uplifting. I am only pointing out that there have been some uplifting pop songs through the years. But let's be honest, one of the reasons these songs stand out is that they are so rare in the music business today. The vast majority of today's songs do not promote morality. And I would put a little footnote on that. Most of what is promoted heavily is that stuff. But there is so much of moral music out there available that if you're just willing to dig a little more, you'll find that there's just as much, at least as much.
And whatever style of music you like.
Yeah, you'll find some good, clean stuff. And anyway.
In fact, I was on the internet a little while ago, and I found an LDS guy who's a rapper. And I listened to some of his things. I don't usually like rap, but it was, you know, I listened and he had the lyrics posted there.
If I liked rap, I'd go straight for this guy's stuff kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, I read his lyrics and they were fine. And I listened to the music and I was like, okay, well, it's not terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, whatever kind of music you like, look for the ones with the good messages.
Yeah, you might have to look hard, but look.
It's worth thinking. Yeah. Often they promote immorality. Satan is using much of today's music to preach blatantly degrading messages. I can't wait till we get to the part about Elder Cook meeting Mick Jagger. We're going to read that. It's not an urban legend. You can still buy the CD of him telling it himself. Okay. Obscene lyrics find their way into church dances and into the homes of church members. Words we would never permit to be spoken or read in our homes are played, sung, and repeated dozens of times merely because they are set to music. Which is interesting that it says merely because set to music. It should be the other way around, that if it's just spoken, that's bad. But if it's set to music, it should really be pushed away, because then, no matter how much you hate the words,
it's put
to an emotional sound, you know, that's going to attach itself to your emotions.
Let's see, many people who listen to popular music claim that they never listen to the lyrics and that the messages never affect them.
That's called desensitization.
Research, however, shows that our brains are marvelously perceptive. They pick up almost any message with insider sound, whether we consciously know it or not. Those subconsciously received messages may have as much an effect on us as the messages we consciously seek out. While many songs are bad because they stress the trivial and selfish things of this world, such as fame, sorry, I have hiccups, it's hard to read, fame, wealth, and cheap thrills, the most objectionable of all focus on illegal drugs, illicit sex, violence, and Satanism. Let's look at these four aspects of popular music, taking examples from recent rock music, simply because that's what most young people of today listen to.
Music about drugs, beer drinking songs have been around for centuries. But in the mid-60s, a new kind of song appeared, mystical lyrics with obscure words saying of the pleasures of a different kind of artificial stimulant. Songs about illegal drugs, from marijuana to LSD, began to appear in the pop charts. At first, society wouldn't tolerate an open endorsement of illegal drugs, so double entendre. I've never heard that word, entendre. Spellchecker doesn't mind it, so. Entendre and in code words were used to spread the gospel of drugs, of drug usage, to an ever-growing underground.
Yeah. And even people like me, who, you know, in high school was called naive about anything bad.
Yeah.
You know, I know some of the code words.
Yeah. And that's saying something. I think when a quintessential Mormon girl knows some of those things, you know, because they're just so prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
Later, references to drugs became more open. Some groups even named themselves after and built their entire image on drugs and drug-related terminology.
With the prevalence of drug songs over the past 20 years, I can't help but wonder, has the popular music of our time helped to lead children of this generation to their widespread experimentation with drugs? It may be impossible to scientifically prove a cause-effect relationship, but I think common sense leads us to inescapably to that conclusion.
Do you know what I think is kind of...
This talk was in 85, right?
85, so that would have been 24 years ago that mm-hmm. this was given. How much more is it today? And what's mm-hmm. interesting about that idea of coding drugs into it, I think one of the reasons... that it was so popular is because it was a unique approach to lyric writing. And why not take your testimony of the gospel and find ways to weave that in a coded form that by listening to it, you would think it's just a beautiful lyrical poetry, you know, put to music. But it's actually expressing your testimony. Why not? That would be deeper. That would be mm-hmm. more meaningful. It would be more poetic and certainly more uplifting. Cool. And it would just be cool. You know?
I used to love doing that kind of stuff when I was in high school. Almost every time we were forced to write poetry or, you know,
or do an art piece or something.
Yeah, or do art in high school. You know, mine had gospel themes that were coded, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, in one of my crafts class, we were doing stained glass, you know, and the other students were doing pretty flowers and other stuff. I did seven circles. And to everyone else, it looked like seven circles. But to me, it's the plan of salvation.
Yeah, there's the world. So, I mean, yeah. the different stages.
Yeah, I've got the pre-earth life and then the earth and then...
That's so cool, too, because with something like that, you could just lay... What did you call it?
I chose the colors very carefully.
Oh, for
the colors of the glass, and then,
mm-hmm. See, and doing that kind of thing is so fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And I still have it. I still, you know, it's probably the only craft thing that I kept from high school because it was the coolest one to me. Because I was like, it's the plan of salvation.
Yeah,
it's cool.
You know, and so why people would do this to drugs? I don't know. You know, code garbage into it. I don't understand that. But why not? You know, code something beautiful and deeper and more meaningful into it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, our time is up for today, so we're going to finish this talk next time. Very interesting talk, given 24 years ago. And just think how more applicable it is today. We've given you our trivia, which was... I've forgotten, so listen to the podcast. We'll listen to it again so we can look up the answer. And...
thanks for listening.